From the backstretch at Saratoga, this is Loose on the Lead with Steve Bick and Seth Merrill. Loose on the Lead is sponsored by...
Good morning and welcome to Loose on the Lead on this Sunday morning. Seth Merrill in the studio, but we are joined by Steve Bick, live from Louisville via Zoom. Steve, good morning.
Seth, good morning. Good morning, everybody.
Happy to have you on board. You look quite relaxed, and we can see the Twin Spires. And I love the setup, the Twin Spires in the background. Give us a little first-hand update on what the weather's like there on this Sunday before Derby Day.
You want the boots on the ground report? Is that what you're
That's
after?
It. You got it. Yes.
Well, first of all, it's absolutely glorious. And you know, after yesterday's dangerous situation in the Capital District, I saw the images this morning from Stillwater, and hope everybody's okay. I mean, I checked in with Tina at one point. I had arrived here at Churchill, and I heard about the tornado warning, including in Greenwich. So I called Tina, and she was hunkered down in the basement. It was like a storm chaser scene. Unbelievable. So I hope everybody's okay. Meanwhile, here, it is just glorious. I got to say, for those that followed on Twitter this morning, I put up a couple of different things. It's a very strange kind of eerie calm that pervades over the downs. Just none of the activity that you would expect and that you get used to, you know, year after year. We're 5 days from Oak, 6 days from Derby, and there's just nothing. It's kind of a dullish situation. Place looks fabulous. It's a little bit different just because it's not late April and early May in the bluegrass. So even the drive here was a little bit unusual for me. This is my 20th straight Derby, and it's it goes without saying how unique the scenario is. But happy to be here, and there are certainly more things going on here than just the 2 days of big racing. We've got a situation involving unrest and protest that is going to build up toward Friday and particularly Saturday, and that is part of the story here. And there's no, you know, there's no getting away from it, and it shouldn't be avoided as part of the discussion.
Yeah, and give me a little comparison, because obviously you've been up here over the past few weeks and experienced the no-fan situation up here. What's it like compared to down there? Again, they haven't started racing yet, but as you mentioned, you've been there in years past. The morning's clearly different with the workout situation. But can you make a comparison, no fans here as compared to no fans down there?
It's hard to know, really. And I have been toying with driving over to Ellis Park. It's about 2 hours to Evansville, and I thought about maybe going to Ellis and get the scene there, but it is a different, you know, it's different basically wherever you go and whatever the rules are that have been established. The backstretch, watching from here, from the fourth floor, and looking across, the backstretch in the morning looks like it does essentially 2 weeks out from Derby. On Saturday and Sunday, the week before Derby, the backstretch would have been absolutely thronged with people. And down on the track apron, there would have been today and yesterday, etc., would have been packed with people. You know, there's real tight security for both reasons. And Churchill is, under any scenario, Churchill is frequently an armed camp. It's not a place where you move around freely. So particularly now, and particularly with the expansion that has gone on including the beginning of the construction of the hotel on the first turn. The place is very heavily gated, a lot like Saratoga, where there's only one way onto the backstretch and one way onto the front stretch, and there's the predictable wristbanding and temperature taking and so forth. But the gates will be fully, fully locked down all week, and especially into Thursday, Friday, and Saturday.
Yeah, it's going to be very interesting to see how it plays out down there. Folks can check out your radio show during the week, where it'll be live from Churchill. Is that where you do the radio show? That is a great location. It looks great. I will give you the thumbs up, though, with the Twin Spires behind you.
You gotta place yourself in proximity to the Twin Spires, and even though I've been coming here, like I said, for 20 years, my first time ever at Churchill was in actually the fall season of '99, and it's easy to say iconic, but it's really more than that. It's a moving site, and even with the building that has gone on either side, when the grandstand. First the grandstand got built up, and then in the mid-aughts, they started to make the construction on the old clubhouse, basically eradicating the old clubhouse. Anybody that hasn't come here in a couple of decades will be, they'll be confused. They really won't even know where they are, because it is a nonstop endeavor to modernize this plant. And from the time that I started coming and was working here with Carolina Barbecue, in particular for Breeders' Cups and for derbies, the place has really morphed into a very modern facility. And even with those two buildings kind of diminishing the way the spires look, when you're up close to them, it's special. It always is. It's one of the things about coming here that never gets old.
And as I say, it looks good. But let's jump in. We're going to recap some of the action from up here yesterday. 10:30, I'm going to be joined on the set by John Embriel. Johnny I coming up by the stop. So we have about 15 minutes to hit on some of the stakes action from yesterday. And people will get to see the freakish afternoon you talked about earlier, where probably three times during the afternoon, it switched 180 degrees from torrential downpour to sun. We'll get to see that. And then after the win, we were the press people were all kind of standing around waiting for Mike Trombetta to be free to interview. And all of a sudden, everybody's phone in the place went off with that tornado warning. It was a funny in a weird way afternoon here at Saratoga yesterday. There have been plenty of them weather-wise, but that added a new chapter in the fact that it changed so often during the afternoon. But let's start things out taking a look at the Sword Dancer. Again, by the time the Sword Dancer was run, the sun was out. Channel Maker goes to the front. Marzo, who looked like the speed, just couldn't get to the lead going into the first turn. Channel Maker took over. Manny Franco takes him all the way around. We're watching the stretch run here. Chart margin of 5 3/4 lengths. 8-1 for the Bill Mott runner. Cross Border makes an okay late run, but just can't get up to the winner. And Aquaphobia runs third. But a nice win for Bill Mott and Channel Maker in the Sword Dancer yesterday.
Well, what a nice, venerable gelding he is.
Yeah.
And, all this win does is kind of reinforce English Channel's reputation as a sire whose progeny like give in the ground. One of the real challenges yesterday, as part of the weather, and being a horse player, you have to deal with this. And there are days when you're going to get beat because, in part, of the uncertainties. And knowing that there was going to be a wet and soggy turf course, for a turf course to literally be called soft, we don't get that designation all that often. So for it to be soft, that really tells you a lot. That always benefits front runners. It's very difficult for horses to rally. In addition, the softish turf always produces slower times. So that also inhibits late runs. But whoever was going to be part of the pace was going to have an advantage. And give Manny Frankel a lot of credit for being aggressive, getting control of this race. And you said Marzo tried to chase with Santana and, you know, lasted about half the, you know, about halfway onto the back stretch the second time. Channelmaker at no point looked like he was going to lose this race. And Cross Border, as you mentioned, rallied. I thought Luis Saez, who ended up inheriting the mount on Aquaphobia, I thought maybe he would be a little bit, you know, more forwardly placed, and it certainly worked to his advantage in the run and the United Nations. But this was a fairly predictable outcome. You got a fat 8-1. You know, Channelmaker kind of wins by appointment, but he always tries. And what a terrific performance from the 6-year-old. And it actually was part of has been a very good weekend and a very good several days for Gary Barber, who was a part of, I think, 4 stake wins in the last like 4 days.
Yeah.
Channelmaker, I wanted to go wide in the cross country pick 5. I used 6 horses, knowing that there was going to be a bit of a mysterious scenario, and Channelmaker wire to wire.
Yeah, very good effort. Bill Mott afterwards say tough horse to ride, but Manny Franco does a great job keeping him out in front all the way around. Speaking of a fun, nice win, I know you're friends with Mrs. Weber, so let's take a look at the 4-go yesterday. And boy, charging from the back of the pack. Win, win, win. And a little bit later on, I got some winner circle comments from folks. And Mike Trombetta said, I thought, you know, I didn't see any way we were going to get this one. But win, win, win. Big late charge to get up and take the 4-go at 7-1. Complexity runs second. True Timber runs third. Funny Guy runs fourth in here. But again, for Mrs. Weber, Live Oak Plantation, and Mike Trombetta, win, win, win gets it done in the 4-go.
This was a spectacular performance, obviously. It didn't come back with a huge number, a 97 buyer. What's amazing about this, when you looked at this race, it didn't necessarily feel like there was going to be a lot of pace. And you looked around, and you know, one of the storylines was, well, how is Whitmore going to rally, et cetera? How are the horses from, you know, that are going to come with a late run that they wouldn't necessarily get a pace to run into? Then when Win 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 detaches himself from the field, essentially, you thought, you know, he dropped out of it. His chicklet wasn't even on the screen. It's unbelievable. Now, what Castellano was able to do was find the best footing on that wet racetrack. And you know, Robbie Davis and Rich Migliori, 2 guys from years ago, famous for the what they call the water wagon path, where the wheels compress, the wheels of the exterior wheel of one of the tracks and the other, the interior wheel of the other tractor, when they run over each other, they have a tendency on a wet racetrack to basically pack down. And the footing is typically very good in like the 3.5-4 path, and then out in the 6.5-7 path. And Javier found good footing too. Win, win, win set a track record at Tampa as a 3-year-old going 7/8. And then he spent the next essentially 17 months doing a bunch of other things. And, you know, you certainly are.
Oh, Steve, you froze. Although I still see him going on my. Okay, we are going to reconnect with Steve as he froze up in the Zoom universe. So we will again. I'm not quite sure in the Zoom universe how long that takes, but I will vamp subsequently. Again, a little bit later on, I was down in the winner's circle in the winner's circle post-race area for the stakes races yesterday. I have a little video of comments from some of the jockeys and trainers coming up a little bit later on. And as Steve kind of alluded to, Trombetta said, yeah, I looked up, and he didn't say chicklet. He said, the little square box for my horse was not on the screen. He said, I didn't think I had any kind of a chance. And Then he said, and then the box showed up, and I thought, oh, okay, now we're gonna be in this, and maybe do have a chance, and more than a chance, gets it done with a nice late run down the stretch. The chart margin was half a length. Time was pretty good, given the track condition. They passed the three quarters in 108.9. The final time was 121.71. So, again, it was a big effort for win. And as Steve was kind of alluding to when we went away, you would have to think moving on, this will be more the horse's game. The 7 furlong seems to be right in his wheelhouse, given what he did in Tampa in that Pasco earlier last year, and now in the 4-go here at Saratoga. Puts a nice grade 1, That's one of my favorite races every year. So a nice grade 1 on the resume in a really legitimate field, by the way. I mean, Complexity, funny guy coming off that Morrissey. I said out of the Morrissey, he was going to be a horse to watch. Whitmore, a little bit of a disappointment yesterday, running 7th in there. Maybe just didn't like the track. Funny Guy surprisingly wound up the favorite at 3-1. Mind Control, also a little bit disappointing, given the way he'd run over this track in years past. He wound up 8th in the field. Forensic Fire winds up 11th and last in the field. But it was a nice performance, again, by Win. To get it done, put a grade 1, again, with a classy field, a good grade 1 on the resume for Mike Trombetta and Live Oak. And I can see out of the corner of my eye, we're still chasing after reconnecting with Mr. Bick via,
what the hell happened?
You froze up. You froze. It's the 21st century. The Zoom is good, but occasionally a little freeze-up. But why don't we move on? Because it was a really nice win, as I said, as I vamped a little bit, against a solid field. Nice grade 1 on the resume for Win, Trombetta, and Live Oak Plantation.
I gave a whole dissertation. he had set a track record in the Pasco at Tampa as a 3-year-old. And, you know, you certainly understand Mrs. Weber and Trombetta trying to go the classic trail with him as a 3-year-old. But this is always what he was meant to do. I mean, you look at his breeding. He's by Hattrick. He's out of a Smarty Jones mare. So he's got a little stamina underneath, and he's got, you know, the one-turn speed from Hattrick. This is what he's meant to do. You know, the race did not come back all that fast, 97 Beyer, but it's a grade 1 win. Castellano doing a great job finding the best footing when he dropped out of it. The pace ended up being more smart than we expected it to be, frankly. One of the storylines going in was that there wasn't a tremendous amount of obvious speed in this race, and yet it went in 22, 44, and 3, 108 and 4. I thought it was a thrilling performance, and you got 7-1. You know, he did take money. Turnbacks, you listen to Andy Serling, you know, Andy preaches turnbacks work. That's a potent angle. And I got to tell you, Trombetta's live, I think, today with that Puerto Rican filly in the Shoe B. And Mike and Mrs. Weber, winners a couple of weeks ago with Global Access up in Toronto. Trombetta has had a very, very good year. And this is a mammoth win for the whole team.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's go on to the Amsterdam Grade 2 event for the 3-year-old sprinting. And again, Steve Asmussen in the winner's circle afterwards said it was kind of ironic. This is the first time Yaupon has faced 3-year-olds. Third career start, gets it done very nicely. Yaupon, the number 2 horse. Basin cutting back, another cutback,
turn back,
and then number 4 Premier Star in the third spot. But Yaupon, 3 starts, 3 wins, another potent sprinter in the Asmussen barn.
This is 100 Beyer that came back. This is a serious horse.
Nope.
Another, you know, and another sprinter for the Highland Bronx. You lose me?
Yeah, we lost you there for a second, but now we have you.
Okay. It's quite amazing that the Highland Bronx, who, of course, brought you Natoli, here's another sprinter in that familiar white jacket with the orange star. It's crazy. In fact, I asked Dr. John Nichols this morning, and I'm going to have to check with Blasey and Asmussen, whoever is buying horses and picking out horses for the Highland Broads, they seem to have a real bend for this kind of horse, for, you know, sprinty types. Not that there's anything wrong with that. You know, some people focus on classic trail routers, but this is a really nice Uncle Mo and another addition to the sprint scene. And Basin, Asmussen, former trainee, now with Fletcher, you know, I think he'll continue going the short route as well.
And just quickly, bye-bye Melvin in the Saranac. Johnny Velasquez got off and said, slipping and sliding a little bit, but had enough to get it done with a nice late run over Don Juan Kitten. And I also, the guys can kind of pull up the replay of that, too. I went back to earlier in the week because you mentioned it, Gary Barber with Jack and Noah in the Mahoney earlier this week. And I wanted to pull that up because it was the first win of the meet for Mark Cassie. So that was kind of notable as well over the last few days.
Well, and there were a couple of other first wins of the meet that same day, actually. But Jack and Noah, that was a clever gambit, just absolutely winging it and running them off their feet. Bye-bye Melvin. This is a big performance. Alex Campbell, who, of course, had the 1-2 finishers with Midnight Tea Time and the brother, what was it? Was that last week or 2 weeks ago? But this is a big win. Another, yeah, Uncle Mo showing his diversity as a stallion. He wins a three-year-old sprint race, then he wins a three-year-old mile turf race. Uncle Mo, you know, really strong with any kind of mare. This was exciting, and great job by Johnny to be able to stay in contact and run down a horse loose under those conditions. That's a terrific performance. I'm looking forward to talking to Graham Motion tomorrow on the radio. A horse that you got to figure is only going to go forward from here. 19-1. You won't see that again anytime soon.
Yeah, very good. So, again, that's some of the stakes action up here. We will be tuning in for the radio broadcast over the next week, the lead up to the Derby, as you will be live from Churchill Downs. Again, love the location in front of the Twin Spires. Steve, appreciate the visit, and knock them dead this week on the radio.
Zach, thanks a lot. Look forward to talking to you. I won't be coming to you from here Sunday, next Sunday. I'll be on the road back home by Sunday 10 o'clock, but we'll talk to you on the way back from Churchill Downs. Happy Derby, as they say around here. It's not the usual scenario, and I don't know if happy is the right descriptor for the situation here in Louisville. But they're going to run 10 furlongs under those Twin Spires next Saturday, and it's always important. And especially, of course, for the connections locally, another big opportunity for Sakatoga, Barkley Tagg, and his team with Tis the Law, a very heavy and very obvious favorite next Saturday. Thanks, Seth.
Yeah, looking forward to it. Steve, thanks. All right, we'll take a break. And as promised, he's in the green room. He's ready to go. John Embriel, Johnny I, the announcer up here at Saratoga. We're going to talk a little bit about his gig here and at the other NYRA tracks. All of that coming up right after this. Stay tuned.
The New York hero, Tis the Law and Manny Franco to win the Belmont Stakes.
When New York bred Tis the Law won the 2020 Belmont Stakes, OTB TV was live with owner Jack Nolan to capture all the excitement.
And certainly seeing what he did today, we think a mile and a quarter is well within his range, and hopefully he can prove it at Saratoga Racecourse.
For exclusive interviews and racing information, stay with Capital OTB and OTB TV and win more.
Welcome to Albany County, an incredible destination to live, work, and play. With easy connections to more than a dozen cities from our vibrant modern airport, it's a short trip downtown to a hive of culture and amusement. From world-class shows at the newly renovated Times Union Center to reliving the past at the New York State Museum. From outdoor recreation to shopping to nightlife, Albany County has something for everyone. We'll see you soon.
I got it. I got it. Hey! I got something that makes me want to shout. I got something that tells me what it's all about. I got a move that tells me what to do.
Is down towards the rail, and Tis the Law has the lead at the top of the stretch. It is Tis the Law in front with 3/16 to the finish. Tis the Law has a four-length lead. He's left the others behind. It's Tis the Law. He won the Belmont Stakes. He's going to win the Run Happy Travers, and now it's on to Kentucky as the favorite in the Derby. Here he is, Saratoga's hometown hero, Tis the Law.
Yes, Saratoga's hometown hero. A great call by John Embriel. Johnny I, the announcer here at Saratoga, and the other Naira Trax. And I've been chasing him the entire season. Got him in here this morning to talk a little bit about the gig up here at Saratoga and beyond. Johnny, good morning.
Good morning, Seth. Pleasure to be here.
Happy to have you on board to talk a little bit about Saratoga in particular, because I'm sure when you sat down, I said you had to be having fun even without the fans, and you said it has been fun so far, so we'll talk a little bit about that. But first, I wanted to get a little background for folks who may not be familiar, and I was doing some research last night, and I'd read it earlier. I'd forgotten all about it, but you originally got in the game and started your Naira career because you won a contest.
I won a contest. It was
who would have thought?
It was 1979, and at the time I was working for a company called Sports Phone. And before there was the internet and ESPN, Sports Phone was the way that players got scores. Yeah. So my uncle sees an ad in the newspaper, and I had a decent interest in horse racing at the time. He saw an ad in the Daily News that you entered a contest. You didn't get to call races, but you would get a job in the press office. So I entered. Three of us got to call a live race at Belmont. At that point, that was the most nervous I had ever been, you know, doing anything. And that was July 25th, 1979. I'll never forget it. Marshall Cassidy was up in the booth with me. And fortunately, you know, got the gig and started November 5th of 79.
Press office, and go through some of the iterations. You really had a number of different positions at Naira.
You know, it's too early for those kind of words, you know, the sad iteration. Anyway,
I got to throw one or two in a day.
Fortunately, I've been able to do, you know, a lot of different things. I was in the press office communications department. I was in simulcasting. I worked with Harvey Pack on the weekly Inside Racing show. Then I eventually hosted the live, not the live, but the Thoroughbred Action show, which was on following the races. Then got involved in TV production, you know, in the truck. Was Tom Durkin's backup here for many, many years, then Larry's backup over the last 5 years, and then this opportunity came up, and so it's been a quick 40 years.
And you mentioned some of that. Ed, when you sat down, we were talking about back here and the days here on OTB TV when Naira, or when the New York OTB had their show up here and we had our show. Mm-hmm. But over on the front side, there used to be the different variations of the pregame show that have morphed into more sophisticated, and you talk about the nightly show, which recapped the races, and it right. was a day when people could use that, but now you can go on the internet and you watch the races, so it's become very different. The Fox show is doing a great job, but you were probably part of that move to a new type of a format that just, again, in the 21st century, makes sense.
And actually, my first taste in TV came, I was kind of the liaison on the weekly Channel 9 OTB show downstate with Frank Wright and Charles C. Canny, and Marshall was on that show as well. So I got a little bit of a taste of production, and I was able to sometimes find some video for Frank that he would use when he would do his features on that weekly show. So it really started then, and then for whatever reason, I got involved with the with some on-air stuff, and then it did, as you say, you know, morph into much bigger things. But the show that they're doing now yeah. is just, you know, years and years ahead of what it was, you know, back then. And to knock out, you know, 5-6 hour shows every day, that's a real credit, you know, to the talent, the production people, even the director, Mitch Levitis, who used to direct over here.
Yeah, Mitch, who had the Jockey basketball game I played in a couple of years to benefit the he gave me a couple of cracks
I'm
when
sure
I got into
took,
the game.
I'm Mitch. Sure he took care of you a couple of times, Seth.
You talk about winning the contest and getting a call. What was your first call like? Because I don't know that they've done it the past couple of years, but Maryland has had a fun kind of promotional thing where they brought in local press people, local media, to call one race on a particular day. Mm-hmm. And it's funny because you can tell they all studied the night before. Yeah, yeah. And that first call on it, they're right on it. And about the time they hit the turn, it all falls apart. So what was your first call?
I know I struggled through it. It was a 6 furlong race with a 9-horse field. And I always forget the name of the horse, but I know Jacinto Vasquez rode the winner. It was number 6. Seth, I just got through it. I mean, it was almost like just getting through the forego yesterday with the downpour of the rain. I was just happy that I got through it, and it, you know, it was done, because you know that was a tough one to do. But you know, but I'll never forget that, having that opportunity, you know, so many years ago. And certainly, you know, just walking into Belmont, you know, I had been there before as a fan, obviously, but just walking in and thinking that I was gonna, you know, was gonna call a race, I said, saying to myself at one point, what the heck am I doing? I mean, I was 24 years old, and you know, really didn't know the booth at all. And they're so the booths are different at the three tracks, in that, you know, Belmont, you're so high up, and the track is so big, you don't realize how small they look until you get up there, you know, and try to call a race.
Well, that was one of my questions, in fact, the three NYRA tracks, Aqueduct, Belmont, and Saratoga. Talk a little bit about the differences calling and just the logistics of where the booth is and what the sight lines are like.
Well, as I said, Belmont, the hard part is that that they are so far away, and you're way up top. Aqueduct is probably the easiest track to call. It's a mile and an eighth. You're more on top of it. It's slightly lower than what Belmont is, and you've got good angles all around. Saratoga presents its own situations. It's good in that you're kind of right in the middle of everything, where and you're much lower. The lower is good when the horses are finishing, but the lower doesn't help the angle that you want when the horses come into the stretch, if you know what I'm saying. Plus, you've got trees. Plus, you've got some wood that leads down to the steward's stand that you got to step behind. So it does present its idiosyncrasies, but it's certainly fun to call here at at Saratoga. When they finish, it's almost like you can reach out and just touch them. Yeah, you don't have that at Belmont or Aqueduct.
Yeah, they have moved us to keep people spread out. They put the auxiliary press box over in the turf terrace, so I'm using that option. And yes. It really is like they're right there.
Yeah,
right in front
especially
of
when you're comparing the tracks. Yeah.
Yeah, no, it's great. Your tools, do you have high-tech binoculars, motion, image stabilizing?
No, I use basic 10x50 binoculars. Actually, on the inner turf here, because, again, you are so close, I actually go to the strength is less, a different pair of binoculars. I've always found that, for me, I know Tom used the binoculars you described. They were too heavy for me. I just need to be comfortable when I'm holding them.
Sure.
You get used to what you have. I did try stronger ones at one point at Belmont, and they got me too close when the horses were coming in the stretch. I mean, I don't mean to bore anybody with binocular talk, and I'm not an expert on it, but you find what you're comfortable with, and you go with that.
Talk us a little bit for folks who maybe haven't heard from an announcer before. When I have them in, I always like to get a little of the nuts and bolts. And what is the prep like as you turn the page from, let's say, race 5 to race 6? What is your race prep like?
Well, there's one thing that I think you have to do, and I think every announcer does. You've got to be like Mariano Rivera and be a closer, in that you've got to move on to the next, in our case, the next race, in his case, the next game, even if you came up with a muddy race and it wasn't, I don't mean the track condition, I mean you might have messed up a little bit. You've got to move on, and now the next race is the most important race that you're going to call. I mean, I'll do some work in the morning. I don't handicap the races per se, only because I've always felt that you never know what's going to happen when those gates open. Now, we all know certain speed horses, they're most likely to go to the lead. But I don't like to try to analyze who's going to be where. I just let the race develop and, you know, and then call it from there. But you do work in the morning and even before that, looking at the entries. The one thing that is a priority is that, you know, you want to get pronunciations right. There's a lot of crazy names right now. So you'll go to the dictionary, you'll go to Google, whatever the case might be, just to find out pronunciation. Then here's the case. I must have said it incorrectly the first time. Yopan, who won yesterday, the owner went into Elise's office in the Horsemen's Relations and told her how to say it. I wish more owners would do it. I want to know how to say it correctly, you know. So you do that, and then you clearly look through the program once you get scratches, you know, and that, and make sure you've got a, you know, where you're going to be when a particular race comes up. But you know, how many cases have we seen where horses, the Whitney with Tom's d'Etat, I mean, you know, just got left there. So the race is going to do what it's going to do. And so I don't really handicap. And I'm a lousy handicapper anyway, so there's no point in me doing that.
Yopan, because I was saying Yopan.
So. I probably said it that way the first time, but right, then it was Yopan.
You do a great
job, and of course Yopan won. So, I mean, you had to say it, you know, six or seven times.
You do a great job with that, though, because a lot of times I will look at a name in the program, and I'll pull up your replay to see if I'm – the mashups are the ones that get me, though, because a lot of times they're put together in a way that
yes.
you can read them a couple of different ways, and I even verily
right.
pick the wrong one.
But a lot of times we're guessing. The way I say it doesn't, obviously, yeah, I messed up your part. So the way I say it doesn't, you know, mean that that I've got it right. But and I also talk to the talent on the live show, whether it be Greg Wolf or Maggie or Acacia, and they'll sometimes find out in the paddock by talking to the. It's better to talk to the owner because a lot of times the trainer doesn't, he or she doesn't know the pronunciation either. But they'll find out and then text me and, you know, give me a heads up.
You also spent a little time out in Chicago at Arlington. Talk about that.
Well, that was 1982. And that was the year that the Travers featured the winners. And this is what, this was just oh, how
runaway,
I'm doing it historically.
Groom.
This was the Runaway Groom, yeah, Travers, where he went up against...
I remember that because I catched that Runaway Groom.
Oh, yeah.
That's why you remember.
Well, the three different winners of the Triple Crown races. So I was here in Saratoga. Long story short, they switched management in Arlington. Phil Georgeff, who I didn't know at the time, was a legend out there. So they, for whatever reason, the new management didn't want Phil. There was a connection here between management here and there. They asked me if I want to go. Sure. So I go, and I basically got booed every day, you know, in Chicago. Not my kind of town, as the song goes. But it was a great experience. It certainly humbled me. I did the best that I could. I got through it. I called some, you know, pretty big stakes races, the Secretariat and things like that. Dave Johnson actually came in to call the Arlington Million for NBC. So it was good spending some time with Dave, you know, when he did that. But it was a learning experience. It helped me a lot. It gave me, you know, some background as I came back here and some experience. But, you know, you never think, I think I was 27 at the time, you never think you're going to get booed, you know. So, but I did, and I again, the things you find out later, Phil Georgeff was the guy that Tom Durkin grew up listening to. So Tom really, I don't know if idolized is too strong of a word, but he certainly looked up to
sure.
Phil. But again, I didn't know all that at the age of 27 and wept behind my ears here in Saratoga.
Have you called any other venues, or more interestingly, have you ever called the like quarter horse or a harness race?
I did call a few harness races. I did the nightly recap show at the Meadowlands for 3 or 4 years. I would leave Aqueduct to Belmont and go over there. It was also on MSG. And one time, I think it was John Bothy, couldn't make it in time. So I called the first three harness races. You know, whether it be harness racing, steeplechase.
Oh, there we go.
Oh, my Lord.
The guys in the control room are right
yeah,
on it.
They are right on it. That is the Meadowlands show. And he couldn't make it one night early, so... I did, I think, three races, but the wording is just a little different. I felt a little awkward doing that. And then I did call, and he just passed away, Jim Hannon, who called at Suffolk Downs, I think, for 40 years. I was there twice. He took a day off, I think, for his daughter's wedding and another day off. I forget what the event was. But he didn't take much time, but I got the call at Suffolk a couple of times, and I called it a couple of hunt meets for the steeplechase.
Oh, okay. How different was
that? I didn't get booed at those places from what I from what I remember, as opposed to my wonderful
experience. How different is that? Because it's not, for folks who don't know, they're not ovals. They're out in the
farm. Oh, that was different. And you're set up in a very rustic kind of a way on a platform and stuff, and I think people were just more interested in tailgating anyway.
Yeah, we got the tailgate party here.
exactly right.
So now let's get to it. And it's got to be different that there's no fans, certainly, but it still has to be special to be up here and calling it Saratoga full time.
We got used to the no fan situation at Belmont, you know, before we came here. It is different here in that, like I said before, you're right in the middle of the action here, and there's always 20,000 people here, so you're always going to hear the crowd. Now, I didn't call, there were no people for the Belmont, but certainly when there's 80,000 people here, you can hear the crowd. And there's no open windows at Belmont or Aqueduct. So it's a different day-by-day basis. And certainly you miss it and you wish they were here. That being said, once you put your headsets on and you put the mic on, you're really just trying to make sure you call as good a race as you can, whether there be, you know, no people or 40,000 people there. You just really concentrating on the race call. Yeah, you'd love to hear that, like for the Travers here or the Belmont there. You would love to hear that crowd as Tis the Law came through the stretch. But, you know, but that wasn't meant to be.
Yeah, it's got to be, particularly as you talk about with the positioning of the box up here at Saratoga, you have to feed off that energy a little bit. But next season, hopefully everybody's back. But just give me your thoughts on just being up here and calling Saratoga full-time.
It's been great, and you know, when I first got the position, everybody really just talked about or questioned me about Belmont Stakes and Saratoga. And what's so great about Saratoga, and you know this, and I'm sure most of your fans know this, it's a daily situation where, you know, you've got a stakes race every day, so you've got quality horses, like, and yesterday, four stakes. But besides that, you never know when a two-year-old is going to appear. I mean, that horse yesterday, Founder, who came from, you know, another county to win, just like a win-win-win did in the forego. And, you know, and then you get those bang-bang finishes where you're right on top of the action. You know, you can't help but being excited, fans or no fans. You can't help but being pumped up and excited on a daily basis at Saratoga.
And I think that comes through with your calls, as we saw when we let off the segment, the nice call in the Travers. Great job there. And it is going to be fun going into the Derby with the hometown hero, as it were, Barclay and Jack Knowlton and company. And you alluded to it a little earlier. I always like to ask announcers, too, when I get them in here, talk about weather situations. I mean, you had one yesterday, but certainly that was nothing compared to what may get in the wintertime down at Aqueduct. How do you deal with that? And sometimes do you have to look over at the TV monitor?
We use whatever devices we can use. I think, though, the most difficult weather scenario I've encountered is the sun at Belmont. Later in the day, like 5:30 or 6 o'clock, there were two things that I was concerned about going into the Belmont. One was the fact that it was a mile and an eighth, didn't start in front of you, and you're concerned about maybe missing something because you're at a side angle there, so you're concerned about maybe missing something when they leave the gate. Fortunately, I think all of them left pretty well, and this is a true story. So the sun can just come on an angle and really hit the horses at the top of the stretch. Seth, 5 minutes before the Belmont Stakes, cloud cover came over. I didn't have to worry about the sun, and that's a true story.
The gods of racing.
Looking. There you go. Exactly.
I ask this to jockeys every once in a while, or trainers too. I don't know whether I've ever asked an announcer. You have a favorite type of race to call?
I do. And I think it depends on the track. Up here, I really enjoy the 1 miles on the inner.
Okay.
Like I said, you know, they start right in front of you. You know, they get involved right away. They're into the turn, and it's on the inner turf, so you've got them really, you know, really up close. Belmont, I think for me, it's the ones that start in front. Belmont, you have very, very few of them. You get a couple of turf races, obviously the Belmont Stakes under a normal year. Aqueduct, you get the mile and an eighth on the dirt. Saratoga, you get the mile and an eighth on the dirt. But if I had to pick one, I would pick a mile on the inner. Those I've really, really enjoyed calling up here.
Yeah, nice. And again, you do a great job, and happy to see you in the booth after putting in a lot of years at the various positions. And Naira, again, you're doing a great job. And the enthusiasm coming down the stretch, even without the fans, is coming through this year. Appreciate your taking the time to stop over here. And you're kind of a hopeful tale for folks to look for the little contest in the paper. And who knows where you may wind up.
You never know. That's exactly right. Just it was very tough to follow Steve Bick. So I hope we did okay.
You knocked it out of the park. John, again, we appreciate the visit.
Thank you very much for having me, Seth. Much appreciated.
John Embriel, the announcer here at Saratoga and beyond on the New York Racing Association tracks. All right, we'll take a break. We'll come back and wrap it up for Loose on the Lead on a Sunday morning. Stay tuned.
No track, no problem. There's no better place to follow the Saratoga race meet than Capital OTB and OTB TV. With our live TV shows from the Saratoga backstretch and our live remotes, all the information you need is right here. Each and every day of the Saratoga meet, we talk with all the top trainers, jockeys, handicappers, and racing personalities. So stay with Capital OTB and OTB TV this racing season and win more.
In a recent study of some of the top online wagering sites, Capital OTB won big in total player rewards, far surpassing some of the best-known wagering sites in America. While other rewards programs simply offer you points redeemable for gift cards, Capital OTB's rebates are paid to you in actual cash. Plus, Capital OTB gives you full and immediate access to your money. So if all you're getting now are points and gift cards, join Capital OTB Player Rewards today and get cash back. Visit CapitalOTBBet.com and sign up today.
Come on.
I want sales reports on my desk by Monday.
Whoops. My bad.
Love racing? RTN brings you every live simulcast on your home television, plus live video streaming and race replays on your PC and mobile devices. To order, visit RTN.tv. RTN, a breed apart.
Welcome back to Loose on the Lead on this Sunday morning. As I've been doing pretty regularly here, printing up the Equibase stats at the end of the day, just because the trainer and jockey battles are really, since the beginning of the meet, have been fun to watch. Irad Ortiz, and I haven't seen anything. I haven't checked in the last few minutes, but I haven't seen any update on Irad and whether he'll be riding today or not. But he's now three behind his brother. Jose Ortiz with 48, Irad with 45 wins. Joel Rosario still right there in the mix with 43. Luis Saez, those three are going to battle for the title. Luis Saez is fourth, but with 30. Castellano fifth with 24. Manny Franco down in sixth place. Gaffleon in sixth. Manny Franco in seventh. Of course, Manny heads out on Monday. So he's not going to be gaining any ground after that, as he will be down in Kentucky for his ride on Tis the Law. But it's going to come down to Jose Irad or Joel, who are within five of each other going into the last 7 days of the meet. On the trainer side of things, deadlocked. 25 wins apiece for Chad Brown and Todd Pletcher. Christophe Clement is back with 19. Mike Maker with 18. Linda Rice with 13. Rudy with 12, Steve Asmussen 11, Jim Bond, really good meet, 34 starters, 10 wins, Bill Mott has 9, Orlando Noda, who came in and sat with us early in the meet, at that point he maybe had 3 wins, but it was early in the meet, and I said, but you know, what are you shooting for? He said, 6 wins, he's got 8 now, so he has surpassed his goal. Ray Handel having a good meet, 6 wins and 31 starters so far, so again, it's going to be fun, though, to watch the battle down to the wire on the jockey side with Jose Arad and Joel right in the mix, and Chad and Todd tied on the trainer side. I mentioned it during the handicappers report, but just to reiterate, three notables kind of out of the Derby over the past couple of days: Cheryl Spite, Caracaro, Dr. Post. Caracaro worked on Friday. Trainer wasn't happy with the way the horse came out of the work. Todd Pletcher decided Dr. Post will head to the Jim Dandy up here on the same day as the Derby. And Cheryl Spite, the Canadian runner from Roger Atfield, who had a lot of talent, lightly raced, had no Derby points, but they were going to take their Derby shot. But a minor cough or a minor temperature, I've forgotten what the story was, but it was a minor issue that just, you know, a week out, you can't then head to the Derby. So Cheryl Spite also going to bypass. Also mentioned on the handicapper support, if you want to take a look at the new 20-horse gate, it will be the second race coming up on September 1st. So that's Tuesday, I believe, as they kick off the short Derby meet down at Churchill Downs. But again, they have a 20-horse gate now, so it won't be that two-gate situation with that gap at between 16 and 17. It's a 20-horse gate, and they're going to test it on Tuesday. I think, I don't know if I can find it here in the article. I think it's only it's a seven-horse field, so they're not going to fill the gate. But it's going to be a mile-and-a-quarter race on Tuesday, so they'll be able to kind of position it and give it a little test run, getting it on and off the track, et cetera, et cetera. So, again, if you want to look at that new gate, that's coming up on Tuesday in the second race, mile-and-a-quarter maiden event down at Churchill Downs. All right, I mentioned earlier, I headed down to the winner's circle after each of the stakes races yesterday and got comments from jockeys and trainers on the winners of the nice stakes action yesterday up here at Saratoga. And I lead into these interviews looking at the stretch runs. And so you can kind of look, they're in chronological order from early in the day to late in the day. And you can see how the weather kind of changes from it was raining as we went into the Saranac, and then it got nicer again. The Amsterdam, I think, was maybe overcast. The Forgo, you'll see the rain. And then the Sword Dancer, the sun's back out. And it did that kind of a mambo, a weather mambo, three times throughout the day. But you get a chance to see it as we look at these. So, again, this is from yesterday, right up here at Saratoga, just outside the winner's circle. Actually, Trombetta, after the win by Win-Win-Win, we were in undercover because it was still raining a little bit. But otherwise, just outside the winner's circle for these interviews. Trainers and jockeys after the stakes victories yesterday here at Saratoga.
At the top of the stretch, Don Juan Kitten is still there. Emboldened on the outside. Don Juan Kitten holding on to the lead. Emboldened in second. Then it's bye-bye Melvin and Bodie Cream on the outside. Don Juan Kitten trying to take them wire to wire here. Bye-bye Melvin is in second. Don Juan Kitten, one last try on the outside from Bye-bye Melvin. And it's going to be a tight finish here in the Saranac. And it's a photo finish in this 113th running of the Saranac. Did Bye-bye Melvin get up, or did Don Juan Kitten hold on?
Yeah, it does. I mean, it's very soft out there and heavy, though. I mean, even the roller, you feel like you're still going really deep on the ground, so... You know, we just running on top, you know, after that rain, so it feels even deep and slicker at the same time. So, you know, the slip and slide a lot, but he came running anyway.
Was she getting a hold of it early or not till a certain
time? No, the first part, I mean, I came out running just to get a position to go to our first turn, thinking that I'd probably be in the lead. He did not want to go anywhere. And then I grabbed him, after I grabbed him, he felt like he was more comfortable. And he's slipping and sliding, slipping and sliding. And then he wanted to plug in down the stretch. So kind of have to get after him, get after him. And he's slipping and sliding, but good enough to get there.
I mean, he's kind of a late developer, this horse. It's been a little bit of a project in that way, but I'm not surprised the way he ran, but he just he slugs it out, you know, and he obviously handled the soft turf probably better than most.
What made you make the equipment change, and what do you think it might have done for him?
You know, that was kind of my team at home. They just felt that it might help him focus a little bit. So, you know, I give them credit, my assistant Kat McGee and Skylar McKenna, who gallops him every day. You know, he's not easy in the morning, and I give them a lot of credit for how he ran today.
Johnny kind of indicated he's sort of slipping and sliding a little bit and not getting, you know, he's trying, but he wasn't.
Yeah,
really
I mean, look, it's as soft as we ever run on here, you know, so I think it was kind of who handled it or who disliked it the the least, right, at the end of the day, probably.
The field is at the head of the stretch. The half in 44 3/5 seconds, and it is Yopan with the lead. Basin is now moved into second. On the outside is Premier Star. There's less than an eighth of a mile to the finish. Yopan is holding on to the lead. Basin giving chase in second. And Yopan, the three-year-old, makes it 3 for 3 as he wins the Amsterdam. Basin finished second, and Premier Star was third. 6 furlongs over the off-going in 1:08 2/5 seconds.
With the schedule this year, it's very odd that the Amsterdam actually runs this weekend. And, you know, with him, as you mentioned, not breaking his maiden until, you know, late or early summer, but into the summer. I think where we end up, which the irony of it, this is the first time he'd ever actually run against three-year-olds, you know. But with very important, the horse that looks with his physical and as fast as he is a graded stakes winner here at Saratoga, I think we can sit down and map out a, you know, serious future for him from here.
It is True Timber on the inside and Complexity on the outside. And just in behind is Lexingtonian in third. Then Majestic Dunhill, Funny Guy, is down towards the rail as the field comes into the stretch. And it is Complexity who has come away with the lead. True Timber. And on the inside it is Lexingtonian. And here comes Funny Guy now as they move down for the 16th pole. It's Complexity with the lead. And on the extreme outside, here comes a tremendous move from Win, Win, Win to win it at the end. Win, Win, Win storms down the stretch to take the grade one forego.
No matter what, any horse will that was way too far back and it still made huge run and win the race. Not too many horses he does that. He did it. And the nice way, I think he's a really nice horse.
Well, I mean, I thought it was absolutely hopeless, to be honest. And when I looked across the infield, I could see nothing. And, you know, he was completely off the screen. His little square box was completely off the screen. And I just honestly didn't know what was going on. And when they made the bend, it reappeared. And then all of a sudden, once I figured out who was who, you know, it was nice to see him running so hard through the stretch.
What were your thoughts when the track got destroyed?
I thought we were back at the Derby 2 years ago again, you know, so last year. So that's how hard it rained that day. But it's all good. I think he can handle just about any surface you throw at him.
You talk about getting him back to 7-8 years. Last time he ran it, he broke the track record almost, right?
He did break the track record, yes. So, I mean, obviously it's a distance that he likes. He doesn't have the best gate speed, and I was worried that the way this track's been playing, it's very hard to close. Well, what he did, I haven't seen the whole meet, so I'm tickled to death.
They're moving for the head of the stretch with Channel Maker in front. Aquaphobia in second, Corelli is third, Cross Border, and Saddler's Joy. Channel Maker trying to go the entire 12 furlongs on the front end, and Channel Maker has a 5-length lead. Then Aquaphobia and Cross Border on the outside. It is Channel Maker and Manny Franco with a grade one win in the Sword Dancer. Channel Maker the winner. Cross Border was second. Then Aquaphobia and Saddler's Joy.
Man, obviously your intent to get the lead today.
Yeah, that's what the plan always with this horse is, try to get him to break. But sometimes he breaks it slow. And today he broke good, and I take the chance to go on with him and work out great.
Yeah, yeah. He was strong through the stretch. You know, I mean, he ran a powerful race. Loves the going, likes it here. Tough when he turns for home on the lead.
How intent were you on having Andy get for the lead?
Well, we didn't know. We thought maybe the three horse called Marza would probably could be on the lead, and we thought we might be laying second. But you know, opportunity presented itself for him to be on the lead, and Jock accepted the opportunity, and it worked out very well. Sometimes we, you know, you make the right decision, and he certainly did today.
You talked about how.
Oh, he's very tricky. I mean, of course, I mean, you could see how level he was coming through the stretch. He was straight as an arrow, but if he gets in a crowd, sometimes he'll get his head up, or he'll bear in away from horses or whatever. So he's not an easy horse. I mean, he's very, you know, he wouldn't be what every rider wants, but in this particular case, you know, everything went well for him, and he finished up well, and he finished up straight and strong.
Yeah, that was good. Trombetta says, I didn't think I had a shot in there, and it looked like a long shot for win, but gets it done. Somebody on Twitter commented, I was just kind of scrolling through, somebody on Twitter made the very appropriate comment that nothing like winning the Forego, like Forego. Forego, one of my all-time favorite horses, and that was his running style. He would come from out of it and get it done. Go back and watch the Marlboro, maybe. But there was a race where, and I want to say it was Honest Pleasure, Forego gave away, I think it was 30 pounds, and makes this late run and gets up and wins. Forego was a fabulous horse, but that was a Forego-like performance from win. So again, just interesting to hear what some of the connections had to say after the stakes wins yesterday. So thought I'd toss that in to round out this edition of Loose on the Lead. Thanks to my co-host Steve Bick for giving us some live commentary from Churchill Downs. Again, he'll be down all week. Check out his radio show, either live or via the archive, for his good coverage leading into both Oaks and Derby Day down there in Louisville this week. It's hard to believe we are 6 days out from the Kentucky Derby. In late August, we're talking Kentucky Derby, as it will be early September when that happens. As I say, just a week. And Friday, really looking forward to that Kentucky Oaks, which, you know, Speech and Yameen and Swiss Skydiver, that will be one of the highlights of the weekend as well. But all looking forward to Pistol Off, who looked really good in his workout here yesterday, his last big workout leading into it. Looking forward to, you know, the last week up here at Saratoga. Again, 7 days left with today and next week being a six-day week, with the addition of Labor Day being the last day in racing up here. So still 7 days left. Lots of great racing here. And the weather looked pretty good when I saw the forecast. I mean, we're looking maybe low to mid-70s. There was a couple of days where we'll get to the high 70s. It looked like the precipitation is, the chance of that is very low. So, you know, knock wood. Looks like a really, really nice last week up here at Saratoga. We, of course, will be in here every morning trying to bring it to you, as folks can't be here, but we're happy to continue to broadcast live here from our Clare Court set and bring you a little piece of Saratoga. Don't forget, venues around town are doing the watch parties. If you haven't been up yet, just to get a taste of Saratoga, you can do that at the various venues and enjoy some racing and grab some lunch and or dinner. I have, over the last, well, really since the meet started, two or three nights a week, I'll either drive through downtown or I'll park the car and kind of walk up and down Broadway and go a block or two in either direction. And downtown has done nicely. People, you know, a lot of outdoor dining, which makes sense, and people wearing their masks and whatnot. But Saratoga is still cooking along here, even in the funny season we're having. So, again, they're plenty of opportunities. I'm being told through my ear, very good. It was the Marlboro. So we will, as we wrap up the show, you will get to see the crazy performance by Forego. And as I say, I want to say the spread between Forego and I think it's Honest Pleasure. I'm pretty sure it's Honest Pleasure, not Foolish Pleasure. But the spread between those two, 30 pounds, I believe. So we'll see that as we go out. Let me hit you with promos today, a double promo down at the Clubhouse Racebook. Keep that in mind. That's a great place to watch the races as well. Good venue for the last week of Saratoga. And today, a double promo to add to the fun at the Clubhouse Racebook. And don't forget Saratoga Syndicate, which is a lot of fun. For $25, you get some bang for your buck as you get to be part of a $750 late pick 5 ticket at Saratoga next Saturday. And also, everybody that's on the team gets to toss their suggestions into the hat as far as the ticket construction, and then a consensus is formed. There have been a couple of nice hits for the syndicate during the meet. So if you want to have your chance to participate in the syndicate, that typically opens on Sunday afternoon. So check out the website, capitalotb.com, for more information there. All right, I'm going to wrap it up. Again, thanks to Steve Bick for joining us live from Churchill Downs. And really, a lot of thanks to John Embriel, who's doing a great job up here at Saratoga as the NYRA track announcer now. Again, we listened to the Travers call with Saratoga's hometown hero, and he's had plenty of good calls because there have been plenty of good races up here. And he has another week to go. We appreciate him. Another week to go up here at Saratoga, then he moves downstate. But we appreciate his visit this morning as well. All right, I'm going to wrap it up for this edition of Loose on the Lead. Again, as we go out, we will play that Marlboro with the incredible performance from, again, my favorite horse, the horse that pulled me into the game, Forgo. So Seth Merrow for everybody here at Capital OTB TV. We appreciate your tuning in. As far as the morning programming, we're back on Wednesday at 9 a.m. Enjoy the races this afternoon. Cash some tickets. We'll see you next week.
Thing concluded 1976 with a performance that has to rank among the most exciting and dramatic finishes in racing history. Forgo was the star. The Marlboro Cup Handicap was the event, and Willie Shoemaker was the jockey's portion of the 137-pound package Forgo was carrying. The leader at this point, Honest Pleasure, was assigned 119 pounds.
Maintaining the lead by two lengths. Dance Spell is second by a head. On the inside, Father Hogan. Life's Hope is next, and on the far outside, Forgo. Into the stretch. Honest Pleasure has the lead by a length and a half. It's Dance Spell second. Father Hogan on the inside, third. Forgo gains ground on the far outside. A furlong to the finish. Honest Pleasure has the lead. On the outside, here comes Forgo. Father Hogan toward the rail. It's Honest Pleasure. Forgo.
Forgo's amazing stretch run just noses out Honest Pleasure. In fact, Forgo's owner, Mrs. Martha Gary, had to wait for the photo to be convinced.
It was the most exciting race I think I've ever seen, because we really didn't think he was going to make it and weren't quite sure that he had, because he was carrying top weight and more weight than anyone's ever carried in the Marlboro. He was out in the middle of the track, and our box is beyond the finish line, so we really couldn't tell whether he'd won it or not. It's the most gratifying thing in the world. It's really very exciting, and it gives one a great deal of pleasure.
Forgo, the favorite of New York racing fans, received a tumultuous ovation as he paraded down Victory Lane, having just clinched his third consecutive Horse of the Year title.
From the backstretch at Saratoga, this is Loose on the Lead with Steve Bick and Seth Merrow. Loose on the Lead is sponsored by